Continuing in Mitzvah Shin Pei Hei, 385, the Mitzvah to separate challah from dough. In the middle of, towards the beginning of Midini HaMitzvah, Umisha lo hifrish challah ba'isa mafrish osa min halechem. Shneamar ba'cholchem yilechem. That if you don't separate challah from the dough, you could still have the chance to separate challah from the baked product. So it's not like, we have to separate from the dough, otherwise it's treif and you have to throw out all the bread. You still have the opportunity to separate the challah from the bread. And this is done l'chatchila in certain situations, such as matzah. When you're baking matzah, so you take the challah from the bread l'chatchila, because if you take it from the dough, there's a chance that you're going to, in theory, you could just take it right away and burn it. But since we don't want extra dough lying around that hasn't been permanently dechametzified, so you want to separate the challah generally from the baked matzah and not from the dough. Vafilu halosh pachos mikashir kshehu pater michala im achar kach losh pa macheres vishli mashir v'nisariv kol apas bichli echad sheyesh lo toch hakli mitzar fun lachala. Then even if you make a batch of dough that's too small to constitute a shear for chala, and then you make another batch of dough and it's also too small, but the two of them together combine to form the amount that from which you would have to separate chala. So as long as both of those are sitting together in one vessel that has an interior as opposed to just a flat plate, have to be a bowl or some type of a vessel. What's it called? So there's a word for this. No.
Trough?
No. Yeah, you bake a kneading trough. Yeah, it would certainly work. But there's a word for differentiating something that has an interior versus not. That's why
silver. A bowl versus a flat board. How's that? All right.
Whatever, yeah. Vishomati mipi mori. Yesh omrim the davka vashanasana pas minatanor lichli sheyesh bo beis kibol davka. Valiniach oso kishotzio minatanor al gabe luach al hakarka v'chol malkom shein lo toch aval pish nesonu achar kach basal kvar niftar michala. That, according to that opinion, once bread is baked, it can no longer have the requirement of challah set upon it. What do I mean? So let's say you bake some a dough. Well, certainly if they're still in dough state and you put them both in one container, then it would be chayiv challah. But let's say even if you made two small doughs and you bake the bread, and then you took the bread directly into this type of vessel, and then you bake the other smaller dough, and you put the bread again into one vessel. So even at that point in the baking process, even after they're both baked already, since they were put together right out of the oven into one vessel that has an interior, then you would still have to separate challah from those breads.
We'll continue to say Rechina, then we'll talk about the what about. The davka v'zeu shomra rode v'nosen lasalve.
If you take the bread right out of the oven, you put it into a basket or any other type of vessel that has an interior. The davka sal b'shas redia minatanur. That it means that this thing only works until the point that it's right after taking it out of the oven. V'ein tzarech lomar shatanur eino oset tziruf l'chala. But in the oven itself, that wouldn't work, and even if there were two smaller loaves being baked in the oven, that wouldn't combine them for the shir challah. So all these things we should know are subject to dispute. Basically everything. Some say the oven does work. Some say even if you put the breads together at a later point, then that would be considered a tzir of sal. The rabbi v'nichbadim cholkin she'in kpeidal hotzaso me'atanur lasal. And some say that that's what I mean. So even if you don't take it right away out and put it in the basket, nevertheless, it could still combine them for the shear challah. So the reason for that, so what's the reason for the Sefer Chinuch's opinion? That it's only when you take it out from the oven and you put it into the basket immediately. The idea is that that's the conclusion of the baking process, the redia. We know that redia is a special word that we use for taking bread out of the oven. So the taking of the bread out of the oven is the conclusion of the baking process. So the chiyuv challah can only set in until the baking process is concluded, according to this opinion. So it's specifically at that point that you that the two loaves can still combine to form the ashir for challah. But if you combine them at a later point, then that would not count as the combining together for the shear of challah. Now, what about whole wheat bread? Whole wheat bread. The asubin sheba kemach kodem sherikdo mashlim l'shir. If you have flour that is made by taking the whole wheat and grinding the whole wheat all together and making flour out of it, then the bran and the stuff that would be removed to make white flour can be counted towards the shear. Aval achar sherikdo im chazar ve'ervo eino mashlin l'shir. However, if you sifted the flour and you made white flour and you got out all the bran, and then you decided, hey, I think this recipe calls for whole wheat flour. Whoops. I need whole wheat flour. I need some bran in my flour. It can't be pure white flour. And you put some of the bran that you sifted out back into the flour. So that bran does not count towards the shear. It has to be bran that was included in the flour the whole time. Yeah.
Does that mean that, was it cooked?
Okay, yeah, cereals are an issue. That's why the question is what's considered pas. This is in terms of the requirement of challah. So most cereals are, you don't have to separate challah anyway. I mean, even if they were to be considered bread, because they're not, it's a goyish company, not owned by Jews, so you don't have to separate challah. But the question is, then is it a problem of Bishul Yisrael or is it a problem of Pas Yisrael? So if it's not a problem of Bishul Yisrael and it's not bread, so then you're off the hook.
They don't serve it at state dinners, I don't think, right now.
Right. So that's a good, right. So probably cereal is not considered Olal Shulchan Malachim, so probably would not be considered Bishul Yisrael. But if it's considered, would not be subject to a problem of Bishul Yisrael. But if it's bread, then it would be subject to the problem of Pas Yisrael. Pas Yisrael is not subject. So okay, so we're making on Pas Yisrael, but there are people who are not. I can't vouch for everyone in this room, but in general, the minag, especially nowadays, is to be in America, is to be makel on Pas Yisrael in the regular centrist Orthodox community, for the reason that the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch is more machmer on Pas Yisrael than the Rama, so therefore a lot of Sfardim are more machbed on Pas Yisrael than our Ashkenazim. So in Ashkenazim it says that if the Jewish bread is at all of less quality than the Goyish bread, then you're allowed to buy the Goyish bread. So Sfardim would say you're not allowed to buy the Goyish bread unless Pas Yisrael is really not available. So we generally assume that the Goyish bakeries are higher quality than the Yiddish bakeries in the U.S. So therefore you're allowed to buy, at least Ashkenazim are allowed to buy products that are not Pas Yisrael. So Rav Soloveitchik, So Pas Yisrael, it says in the Gemara that the full-fledged prohibition of Pas Yisrael only applies to bread that was baked by a non-Jew at home. Mm-hmm. That was baked by a commercial baker, so then that's what you would be allowed to buy when there was either no Pas Yisrael available or the Pas Yisrael was of lower quality, because the prohibition of Pas Yisrael was instituted against getting too chummy-chummy with non-Jews, and there you might lead to intermarriage. So if the Chazal were more lenient by a baker, a commercial baker, because you have developed less of a relationship when you walk into a store and buy bread than you do if you go to your neighbor's house, and even if the bread has complete kosher ingredients, then if you're dining at your neighbor's house, yeah?
Does a Pas Yisrael have to be baked by Shomer Shabbos?
Yeah. We're machmir that all the things.
Oh, okay.
That bishul, pas, wine, all these types of things we assume that in order to create bishul pas, kosher wine, all these things, you need a full-fledged shomer Shabbos Jew, especially because now if a Jew is publicly machal Shabbos, then they have a status of a goy. So that's for ritual purposes. Again, not for in terms of contracting marriages and yichos and things like that, but for ritual purposes, yeah. So that's what some people ask a question. So the Rashba, I think, in a tshuva. And the Gemara never discusses the possibility, as we know from Avodah Zarah. Can ask your, when you go home, you can get a chazara from all these things. So the Gemara never entertains the possibility that a Jew could asser wine. Never, doesn't entertain the possibility at all. But the Rashba writes in a tshuva so that if a Jew who's not Shomer Shabbos, so his wine would be asser. So some of the commentators ask why. Why should that be the case? There are two reasons that the Chazal assert non-Jewish wine, the wine that was handled by a non-Jew. One is because of the concern for nisuch, that in the olden days, non-Jews very happily, you know, at the beginning of every banquet, they would pour some of the wine as a libation to idolatrous deity. So therefore, since there was a concern that the wine was actually used for idolatrous worship, wine that you knew was used for idolatrous libations is asur midaraisa. That's a question. But Chazal asked any wine that was handled by a non-Jew because they were concerned that as part of the daily religious activities, so the wine could be, potentially, some of the wine could be used for libations. That's one reason. And another reason that Chazal asked non-Jewish wine, and we're even more stringent about it, that's even asur by handling, which is not the case by bishul akum, what we call it, and the pas issue. So, because its wine is the most social, intoxicating, you know, chummy beverage, so therefore, they said that you're not even allowed to drink wine that was handled by a non-Jew because of that's the extra concern for intermarriage as well. So there are two concerns. The one is for the libation, and one is the concern for intermarriage. So some of the later poskim say, you know, talking about this thing that was in, that the Rashba was the first one to mention, that a non-from Jew could asser wine. I say, why? If the issue is because of intermarriage, you're allowed to marry, get married to to a non from Jew or the non from Jew's child. So what's the problem? And there's obviously no concern unless the Jew is actively worshiping Avodah Zarah, Chalila. That you know, that there's no concern for the libation. So why? So the answer is that there's a general knas that we want to, again, we want to penalize non from Jews as much as possible. So therefore, we don't. Therefore, that's the accepted halacha is that we don't drink wine that was handled by non-from Jews either, although again, in emergency situations, there are potentially certain kulas, depending on exactly how not-from the person we're talking about is, and depending on exactly how it was handled. That when a non-Jew, for example, is an active idol worshiper, so the laws governing the manner in which manners of handling in which he asers wine are more stringent than when the non-Jew doesn't worship Avodah Zarah. So we take all the kulas when it comes to a Jew who's not from. So even if they handle wine in a way that would aser it if the non-Jew was actually a worshipped Avodah Zarah, so we don't go that far, and we say that it's just like a non-Jew who doesn't worship Avodah Zarah, which again, the wine, there are also certain leniencies regarding the handling of the wine. And in general, also you have the thing that when it's an actual idol-worshipping non-Jew handles wine, so the wine becomes Asur B'Hanoah. So we assume in general that Goyim nowadays who are not actively worshipping Avodah Zarah, the wine is only going to be Asur to drink and not Asur to derive any benefit from. Yeah.
Since Jews who didn't, we're not actively observing Torah, we're very different from the Jews who don't observe Torah now. Because in the time of Rashba, most of the people lived in Jewish communities. They couldn't leave Jewish communities. It was Middle Ages, basically, right?
Right.
So when a Jew wanted to do in Renaissance, say, to change and move, right, it was already a sign that the person was thinking to apostatize. It was a different sort of thing.
Yeah, it was more rebellious. Yeah, it was viewed as a sign of rebellion. Yeah,
people just don't know they're born like this, and that's how they are.
Yeah, that's the famous hack. That what's the status of non-from Jews nowadays? Are they considered real apostates, or are they considered what's called tinok shenishba? That there's a category in halacha that there's if a Jewish child was kidnapped by non-Jews and raised as a goy, and then he's not considered as responsible for his non-observance as it would be if he had grown up in the firm community and then went off the derech. So yeah, so the question is to how far you apply that. So the Chazon Ish thought that it applies to not from Jews nowadays. Other posts came out that it doesn't apply to not from Jews nowadays because it refers to people. There are two approaches. Again, some posts can say, no, everybody knows that there's such a thing as Orthodox Jews. Everybody knows that there's a Torah. Everybody knows that this is the authentic Judaism, and then they choose not to do it. So even though it's not as rebellious as it used to be in the olden day, you wouldn't say that the person had a status of Tinok Shenishba. Others say no. Still nowadays, since people grow up that way and they're not used to it and they're so far estranged from Torah, so they still have a status of Tinok Shenishba.
Yeah, if you go anywhere outside of New York, you will see how far it is removed from any Jewish community.
Yeah,
it's only here.
In New York, you can still see it.
Right. What do you mean? New York what?
Well, people, when they spread around the United States, Most of the places do not have Jewish communities at all.
Oh, if a Jew grew up, yes, totally ignorant of anything. But if a Jew grows up, or in Israel, if a Jew grows up in Israel and is not from, so...
Yes,
a lot of poskim are very hesitant about applying the... okay, whatever. We're not going to make the pasuk in this halacha l'maisa right now. But, yeah. So if a non-from Jew, so for example, just the last point, then we'll go back to the bread, is, so for example, the real way that a non-Jew asks wine is if they physically stick their hand in the wine. That's how they used to do nisuch. They stick their hand in the wine and swirl it around. That would be the way that they would make
the
libation. The way they used to do it, I think at the banquets, the way that was done at home, not in the context of an altar, is that they used to, I think they used to actually touch it with the hands, which is why the most stringent is when a non-Jew actually touches the wine with the hands.
So the God doesn't get any then.
It's still usur when a non-Jew lifts a bottle of wine and pours you a cup of wine. So since the wine got into the cup through the actions of the non-Jew, so that would still be us. Again, we don't pass like that. If a non-Jew pours you a cup of wine, that's not allowed. But for a not-from Jew, so there are shittas that's allowed, especially if we're a non-Jew, we'd be machmir even for, again, there are disagreements about all these things, on every level. But if a non-Jew, for example, pours a cup of wine, so then we hold that, again, there's also a subject disagreement, we hold that the entire bottle becomes usur, because the stream between the bottle and the wine and the cup connects the two, and the whole bottle becomes usur. So when it comes to a not-from Jew, so we would not be machmir about that. And if a non-from Jew lifts up the bottle, again, without shaking, which is the sign of libation, not they're actually libating, but that's how the gezeirah was made. So if a not-from Jew pours himself or herself a cup of wine, then wouldn't say it asers the rest of the wine in the bottle. That would be one potential leniency, which is of use to people who have not-from relatives and they want to serve wine at a meal. So then you don't have to worry.
If it's mevushal.
Well, obviously it's best if you're around not-from Jews and certainly non-Jews to have all the wine be mevushal. But let's say you have a particular wine you want to serve that's not mevushal, and the only people in the party are Jewish, but they're not from. So you don't have to be concerned that when they pour themselves cups of wine that it's going to asur all the wine in the bottle. Then the from Jew would be allowed to take the bottle and pour himself a cup of wine. But again, you shouldn't allow the not-from Jew to pour an actual cup of wine, even though maybe there are some opinions that would be allowed as well.
For example, if you have non-from Jews, you invite over to your Seder for Kiruv.
Yeah.
All right, common sort of a thing.
Yeah.
And you yourself want to be machmir for the best possible because of the non-bushel wine.
Yeah.
Then, what do you do? Have like an extra bottle for them or something? That seems a little bit awkward. Yeah.
Control the bottle.
Yeah.
You can control the bottle. That's a good time to say,
we have minhag that only the host.
Right, exactly. That would be one option.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I mean, but you have to, when you're weighing what chumras you want to accept upon yourself, you have to be cognizant of what potential leniencies might ensue from being machmer on this chumra. That it might be if you have very adventurous guests and they're going to be, handling all the bottles and pour, they're going to want to pour. Mm-hmm. Things could happen.
And if they spill some of the wine onto a hot plate or something, is that a kashrus issue?
They pour themselves a cup of wine, and then they spill the wine into a hot...
Yeah.
Yeah. that's another reason why you might want to have... Again, there are potentially ways to be matter that b'dievid, but it's not so geschmack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's also... Yeah, there are ways to do it. If the host wants to be machmer... First of all, the non-mevushal wine business is only for someone who's actually reciting Kiddush. It doesn't apply to the four cups in general. So the host is the only one making Kiddush. So you take a bottle of non-mevushal wine, pour everyone. Everyone has their four cups, pour their cup of mevushal wine. The host recites Kiddush. Then you put away the bottle of non-mevushal wine.
Okay.
It's not insurmountable. Fine. So regarding the bread, back to the bread, which is closer to challah.
Yeah.
On our way back to, journey back to challah, we're going to stop by the bread. I was saying, so by the cereal, so if cereal is a, if certain cereals are a problem of pas, so for example, Cheerios. So if Cheerios are a problem of pas, then you have the shaila about Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Some people don't eat Cheerios during Aseres Yemei Tshuva.
Wait, do you have to wash before you eat Cheerios?
It would be mizonos. No, even cakes are subject to pas as well. Yeah. No, it wouldn't be.
You said it was like
the
issue of pas.
I know, but pas Yisrael, doesn't apply to only hamotzi bread. Yeah, it applies to cakes also. Okay. So one thing it's kedai to mention is that, so we were saying how the issue of pas Yisrael is somewhat alleviated if you have what's called a nachtom, a commercial baker, because there's less concern for intermarriage. So Rav Soloveitchik paskin, he said, nowadays, commercial bakeries are even better than nachtom. If you go into Kifud and you buy a bread on it from a commercial bakery and who knows where that has a national hechsher on it, and there's absolutely no concern that you're ever going to come into contact with a person or come into some sort of cordial relationship with the baker of this bread, as opposed to a commercial baker in the times of the Gemara, where you have to walk into his store and interact a little bit in order to purchase the bread.
Certainly, so, because there is no human baker; it's all done by machine.
Well, I mean, there's someone who owns, right, okay. That's another reason, yeah. So, Rav Soloveitchik said that bread nowadays from a commercial bakery is a super nachtom. Mm-hmm. It's a super commercial baker. So, therefore, there's really no problem of pas Yisrael at all. And I think, I don't know about even for Sephardim, but he would certainly paskin for Ashkenazim, and maybe even for Sephardim, I don't have to find out, that there's, lechatchila, you're allowed to purchase bread that is not labeled as pas Yisrael.
Is that shita generally accepted, or,
Yeah, a lot of people accept it, yeah.
I mean, even though, still, like, for Shabbos and for the...
Look, we hold anyway, even if it were not a regular nachtom as opposed to a super nachtom, we hold that if the bread is better quality. So if you like the bread from, I don't know, what's a Goyisha bakery? I don't know. If you like the bread from a Goyisha bakery better than the bread from a Jewish bakery, so good.
Except on Shabbos, you're supposed to make an effort.
Yeah, so according to Rav Soloveitchik, that this is super nachtom and it's not a problem at all, then you wouldn't even need that. But others say, so on Shabbos, you make an effort to have pas Yisrael. And other people would tell you that, hey, we live in New York, we have so many Jewish bakeries, why buy from the Goyisha bakery? Mm-hmm. Depends on your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, because the Hechsher is still support Jewish institutions, because basically, even though it's a Goyisha bakery, but they still give money to...
Well, yeah, I'm not suggesting buying without a hechsher, but I mean, obviously, even though some of the money when you go buy from a Goyisha bakery with a hechsher goes to the hechsher, if you buy from a Jewish bakery, it's all going to Jews. It's obviously better to buy from the Jewish bakery. Okay. Fine. V'hachala ein la shir yadua min ha-Torah. That chala has no minimum shir. Obviously, the dough does, but not the actual challah that you separate. That even if you separate only the size of a barley kernel, you still that's still considered to be good, and you've exempted the dough from the requirement of challah. It could be less than a barley kernel also, but it's just assumed that you wouldn't. There's no such, it'd be hard to separate less than a barley kernel. Shelo nemar b'Torah le'reishis arisoseichem challah tarimu. It says in the Torah that the first part of your doughs you shall remove as challah. So since it's just the first part, it doesn't give a shear. Whatever is considered the beginning of the isa is considered to be is good enough. Shelo nemar b'Torah le'reishis arisoseichem challah tarimu v'chol shu meirim imena patru b'chach. That any amount that you separate, you exempt the rest of the dough from the requirement of challah. Chachamim chiyavunu. Chazal say no. You don't walk up to your friend the Kohen and you show up here. Here's your challah. What? Where? Here. Can't you see? It's between my fingers. Here's your challah. That's not nice. Chachamim chiyavunu lahafrish min ha'isa chelek echad me esrim varba. That you have to give to the Kohen 1/24 of the dough. You should give it to God, his servants in this case. Again, this is not the Raisa, but the Chachamim inferred from this that there is an inyan to give the Kohen a proper amount. That's what the Chazal decided was the proper amount. So if a commercial baker who's baking a lot of bread to sell publicly, Gyam tzorich lerevach and has to make money off of it. Lochi yavu laseis alachas me'arboim ushmoni. Has to give half of the amount that a person baking at home has to give, which is 1/48. The baker has to give 1/48, and a home baked bread has to be 1/24. Obviously, if a baker is baking bread at home, he has to give the homeowner amount and not the baker amount. You always have to give a proportion. It doesn't go by a set amount. You have to give a proportion to the total amount that you're making. So if you have two different doughs that are completely separate, then they would not combine together, and they were together in the trough, like your word, trough. Then they would only combine for challah if they touched each other to the extent that if you tried to pull a piece off, that it would take some of the other one with it. They have to really touch each other and sort of intermingle a little bit, and they have to be owned by one person and be in the same trough. Okay. Okay, so first of all, if you have a dough that you knead with water or any other type of liquid, it's chayav b'challah. So that's a very controversial line, actually. Not everybody agrees to this. Somebody hold that challah is only necessary when you use one of the Shiva Mashkim, the seven official types of liquids that are in the Torah, which are
water.
Water, yes.
Wine.
Milk,
right?
Milk. Honey.
Oil.
Olive oil, yes, specifically. Two more. Blood. Yeah.
Vinegar?
No, vinegar, it's only if it comes from wine. But other vinegar would not put. Blood and dew, which is also a type of water. Okay. Blood, how is blood? Well, you, obviously, it's not relevant for challah. That's only relevant for regarding tuma and tara.
Yeah, but you can't make flay shaker milk bread, right? So,
yeah. Or fish blood.
Okay.
Fish blood, you could use as a mutar. Okay, but the milchig or fleishig bread, yeah. So there's a way to do it. Yeah, there's a way to do it. That if you make it in a special shape that it's never easily recognizable that it's milchig, then you are allowed to do that. That's, yeah.
That's why they give the hexer on date nut bread, right? The, Thomas makes date nut bread.
There's a lot of milchig bread. There's a lot of milchig bread that the OU gives extra to. They hold that is distinctive enough, and I think they're also mitzari, if not everybody agrees to this, but that the packaging, since it's all of them are packaged. Some say no, that it has to be recognizable from the bread itself. English muffins, are English muffins known to be milchig? Well, I think Thomas's English muffins are not actually milchig. They just say OUD, but they only have a very tiny amount of dairy in them, so maybe it's technically bottled. I haven't heard a whole hack about this.
You only eat them with cream cheese on them, so that's
how. Okay, but it doesn't work. It has to be.
Hamburger and date nut bread, I don't think it's going
to,
you know.
Right, but you're not allowed to make it because bread is assumed to be parv. I think Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, the Rav's brother, was machmer that even cakes, this even applied to cakes, which most don't assume. That the cake had to be, since cake by Jews, cake is parv. There's no stam milk cake. That's obviously a cheesecake, okay. Even then, there's parv cheesecake. But Rav Aaron Soloveitchik would agree that if it looks like a cheesecake, then that's okay. But if you stam want to use butter as the base oil for a cake that you're baking, that's no good. I think that's not in the commonly accepted opinion. But, okay. Yeah, but that is milchik and fleishik bread is a problem. Also, if you bake a very small amount, enough for only one meal, then it's acceptable.
Yeah. So in terms of challah, this shurim, now we burn challah, right? So do we have to burn this huge amount that's supposed to go to the kohen?
We'll get there, but no. Uh-huh. The answer is no.
Wait a second. So trim with liquids, right? What about eggs? So eggs.
No,
challah.
Eggs don't count.
Eggs don't count.
I mean, it's also use water.
Okay.
Use an egg challah. You also use water. You don't just use eggs.
Okay. Okay, so because there is water plus the okay,
right. No. Right. So the Sefer Chinuch holds that all liquids, it doesn't matter, even apple juice would be create a chiyuv challah, whereas others hold not like that. Then the Shulchan Aruch it says that has to be under the Shiva Mashkim. So Shulchan Aruch says that you shouldn't bake bread that's completely made of fruit juice. That besides wine would be fine, but you have to put in a little bit of water to make sure that there would be a chiyuv challah over here.
So So egg matzah, huh? Where are they going? That's another.
Yeah, egg matzah. Right. So egg matzah has no water in it.
Yeah. So wait, the yak is actually, in fact, I heard that the reason that they like water challah is because, you know, there's no suffix about that. The eggs making it not really challah, or making the cake.
Yeah, Svardim also. Svardim are very machmer about that. That the machlokes is between the Mechaber and the Rama and Shulchan Aruch. That if the Rama says that it's only that the Rama says that it's only a dough only becomes mezonos if it's very sweet or very oily or very, whereas the Mechaber claim to hold that if no, he does hold. I think it's a question of how he interprets the Rambam. If his interpretation of the Rambam to agree with this is correct or not. So he holds that no, as long as the taste of the of the sugar or the well, eggs or oil, whatever, is extremely recognizable in the finished product, then they would always be mezonos. That's it's very difficult. People make people use in the olden days. Maybe it was more likely that if there was any significant sweetness or oiliness to the bread, that it would be assumed to be like a cakey type of thing, and it wouldn't be used as bread. Nowadays, people make use, if it goes at all by what is commonly done, people make people use this very sweet bread all the time as bread to make sandwiches, to, for Shabbos meals. To...
So example, laffa, for example. Laffa is baked with olive oil, so it becomes like very...
No, laffa is for sure mezonos. I mean, hamotzi.
Yeah, but they use the olive oil to make it, you know...
Good, a little olive oil is okay. The question is whether it's talking about something like what we have, a sweet challah nowadays, the Ashkenazim. So you have a lot of Sephardim who are up in arms about this. No, the Mechaber says that if it's mezonos. So first of all, you have... Even if you would assume that it would be mezonos, which is questionable, there are, you know, other many other shittas even... That could be used to as a tzerufim for paskening for Sephardim. And even if that were the case, that were mezonos, you're kovei asuda.
Yeah.
You use it, you eat a ton during a Shabbos meal. First of all, some shita sold, you don't need to eat a ton in order for it to be considered kovei asuda. You just need to have a normal amount that would be eaten during the course of a meal. But even if you want to assume, think some Sephardim are machmir, that it has to be a shear of four beitzim, I think, four egg volumes. So that's also not so much. And I don't.
So the chumrah of only having water challah for on the first night of Sukkot.
Yeah.
Is that if you're going to convey a suda on it, what difference does it make? You know?
Yeah, most posts can agree with that. Correct. Yeah, others say no, that since the main mitzvah is the... It's a little different over there, because the main mitzvah is specifically the grain, so you want to have the grain be immediately recognizable without an admixture of sweet things. Yeah, but according to the normative psak is that is to be make on that for the first night of even for the first night of Sukkot. Okay, so fine. Uvein, there's a story. Apparently, one of my friends went to Rav Shechter for a suda. So his wife makes very delicious challahs with tons of sugar, maybe cinnamon swirls. Who knows what else? These very sweet things. Apparently, Rav Shechter, you know, cut the challah and distributed it. He says, you know, this is really mezonos, but we are kovei asuda, so we have to make a motzi. Okay, but you're allowed. If you're kovei asuda, so it's good. So it's not a problem at all. Even if it's mamashi cake, even if you take a cake, you have two cakes. Shabbat, you cut the cake and you're eating that in the course of your meal with cholent and egg salad and all these things. So that would also be hamotzi. So I don't fully understand. The Rav Avadia, other Sephardic poskim are so insistent that egg challah is a problem for Shabbos meals. But okay, so some Sephardim are insistent on that. If you have a Sephardic guest, so you can accommodate by buying water challah or pita. Yeah, okay. Fine. So that's one thing. So then he says that it doesn't matter how you bake the bread. That whether it's baked in an oven or in a pit in the ground or on a pan, it's all considered to be bread for the purposes of challah, which not everybody agrees to. Some say, some one sheet in the Gemara says specifically in an oven, but okay, yeah.
What about steamed bread?
Oh, somebody asked me about that just this past week.
Really?
just this past week. He said that there's an Asian...
Chinese to make steamed bread, yeah.
Yeah, they make steamed bread, so the pashas is that's mezonos, so that's not bread at all. That wouldn't be chayv and chal, and that wouldn't be... We'll see. The Sefer Chinuch is about to say that if you make dough, for the, even if it's exactly the same as bread dough, for the purpose of boiling it in water.
Oh, so, bagels,
so that's not chayv.
Are there shayla about bagels then?
There is a bit of a shayla about bagels because bagels...
are boiled and then baked.
They're boiled and then baked, but the boiling doesn't complete the cooking. It's really the baking that completes the cooking, so therefore bagels are hamotzi and chayv and challah and all these things. So... So the pashas is that should be completely mezonos. That even if you're kovei asuda,
mm-hmm. it's like
noodles
which are cooked.
Yeah, noodles and achai mechala. Yeah, you make an enormous batch of homemade noodles. It's not at all chayav in challah. Remember there when I was in yeshiva in Israel, there was this whole haka. There was a disagreement between the badatz of the Eda Charedis and some other hecherim. I think they're talking about Sheris Yisrael, which is like a real Litvisha yeshivisha hecher in Israel, and how the Litvisha yeshivisha hecher followed the shita of Rav Yoshev that Yerushalmi kugel you had to separate challah from. Why? Even though the noodles are first boiled and the dough was essentially made for the noodles, the noodles were boiled, the fact that you form it all into a loaf and then bake it or put it in a pan to cook without liquid in it, which is considered similar to baking, that now it has breadified it, and it has now chayv v'challah, whereas the badatz of the Eda Charedis, their poskim held that you didn't have to separate challah. So some bacharim in yeshiva, when they would buy a slice of Yerushalmi kugel from a bakery with the hechsher of the Eda Charedis, they used to take a little piece off and say, Harei zo challah, in deference to the opinion, the yeshivish opinion of Rav Yoshev, they have to separate your challah from Yerushalmi kugel. Because they didn't do it in the bakery, because the Eda Charedis did not require the separating of challah. Whereas if you bought a Yerushalmi kugel with a different hechsher, so perhaps they were makbid on this and they separated challah from the Yerushalmi kugel. Fine. So it's either, it applies whether if you have a pan on the fire, so whether the pan is already hot when you put in the matzah, the dough, or whether you put the pan in the dough in the pan and then heat it up over the fire, either way that's considered baking. So this shayla also comes up by matzah, which is, what's the din if you, so matzah, you're also technically allowed to bake on a pan. We're machmer, I think, that the matzah is supposed to be baked in a completely warm environment. So we, according to the strict, we would be machmer in general not to bake matzah on a pan because the top is just room temperature, whereas we're machmer to bake matzah in an oven that's completely warm. Okay. So, obviously, the bottom of the oven where the matzah makes contact, and a hand matzah bakery, so it's obviously how much hotter than the air in the oven, but it transfers heat better than the air in the oven. But nevertheless, it's all essentially in a hot environment. So the question is, what happens if you bake matzah and you take the matzah dough and you put it on a pan and only then do you put the pan on the fire? Is that good or not? Are you concerned by the time that the pan is heating up? It's slowly, slowly warming and heating up. If the dough could potentially become chametz before it starts to bake. So the answer is that l'chatchila you're not supposed to do that, but b'di'evit, I assume unless it took a very long time to heat up, the b'di'evit, it would be mutter and it would not be considered to be chametz. But it's just interesting that the Shaar HaTzion, the Mishnah Berurah's little footnotes, writes about this halacha, that even though we'd be makel b'di'evit to eat this type of matzah during Pesach that you put on the pan and then heat it up, so you shouldn't use it for the first night. Shouldn't use it for the first night. Why? Because the first, even you could argue, wait a minute, eating chametz is an iser kares the whole time. So you should be more machmer by the eating than you should by the first night. So the answer is no. I mean, yes, you should be machmer. You shouldn't eat the things that real shilas during the course of Pesach. But for the first night, you want something that's 100% vadai matzah to the extent that there were no shilas whatsoever. There were no shilas whatsoever, and no bidyevids, and no. You could say this is more kosher le Pesach than that. So the thing that's more kosher the Pesach you should take for the first night, and you shouldn't rely on things where there were shilas for the matzah of the first night at least. Okay. So in any of these cases, chay b'chala, it's all called lechem. Shein alacha k'man damer, ein lechem alafoy b'tan or b'vad. It's the alacha doesn't follow the one who says that it's only in an oven. Aval osa isa liyabsha b'chama. If you make dough to dry, or levash l'bikdeira, or to cook in a pot, ein b'chiyuv chala. There's no requirement of challah. Again, not a dry pot. The dry pot would be considered to be like baking, but in a liquid medium. Visa sarnona, a dough that is kilomar mishutefes ben Yisrael v'goy, that's owned by a Jew and a goy together. Chayev is b'challah miyesh b'chilek ha'Yisrael shir challah. It's required to separate challah if the part owned by a Jew is enough. So it depends. You go like if a Jew owns a third of the dough, so you have to cheshbin that if a third of the dough has a shir challah, then that would be required to have challah. Isa naseis b'shvil behemos ptura min challah. If you make it for to be eaten by animals, if you bake dog food, doggy treats, then it's putter. In b'shvil behemos v'adam chayev is b'challah. If it's for animals and people to eat both, then it's chayev. Isa mitzukenes kolomer shehurma mimena challah. If you have dough from which the challah is already separated, v'nis arba ba isa acheres shelo hurma mimena challah, and it got mixed with another one that where the challah was not separated. Kate sadosa, what do you do? Maybe isa acheres, you take another dough v'som challah v'not challah akol. You take challah from another dough and you have it exempt of this mixture, because you don't know when you're taking it from the mixture if you're taking from the part that was already exempt or not. If you have no option of taking another dough, you could take from it itself below bracha lefi adoma. So a mekel that you could take even from itself, but without a bracha lefi shanase is kula tevel. The whole mixture has now become tevel, which is something where the proper matanos, the gifts for the kohanim or the levim, were not separated. They even taking a little bit of this. If you mix it into other ones, then it all becomes tevel, and you have to separate chal again. Tevel that means something where the proper gifts were not separated. If it gets mixed into something else, it even in a tiny amount. It's not. In other words, you don't apply the rule of 1 in 60. Why? Because you can fix it. Mm-hmm. It's like what we call a davar shiyesh l'matirin. You don't have to rely on bittel. That because there's a way to fix it. If a drop of milk falls into a cholent, there's no way to fix it. Either you're allowed to eat it or you're not allowed to eat it. But if it's something that's tevel, so you can always separate the matanos from elsewhere, and you could fix it. So there's no reason to rely on the bittel. Moshe kazavti beseder emor el hakohanim lav yotes, as I explained there. It's for males and females, but it's especially a mitzvah that's incumbent on women, as we explained last time. Eretz Yisrael bilvad mi daraisa. So on a daraisa level, it's only in Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar ba'ochlechem milechem haaretz. The pasuk says explicitly that challah applies when you eat from the bread of the land. V'davka bizman shekol Yisrael sham kiloma rubam. It says the challah kicks in when you come to the land, meaning it's when most Jews have come and live in the land of Israel. That's when challah is deraisa, but even in Eretz Yisrael, it would not be deraisa when most Jews don't live in Eretz Yisrael. So we're coming up on this pretty quick. That challah is going to revert to be an iser deraisa. Going to be have to be extra careful. But midrabanan, you even have to separate challah not just in areas close to Eretz Yisrael, which is the case for some other mitzvos that are dependent on agricultural things. So since challah was something you had to give all the time to the kohanim, even in the household, so this is why Chazal instituted that even in the diaspora you have to separate challah, which is not the case by the other Trumas and Maisris, which are done in the fields. Since the reason that you have to separate challah even in Chutz La'aretz is because it shouldn't be forgotten from Israel. You don't separate the amounts that we said before. You only separate an olive's bulk. Again, even a smaller amount should work, b'di'eved. But to give a nice gesunta piece. So you separate a kezayis. Umashlichen osa ba'ish. You throw it in the fire. Vein and achelas the shum kohen katan ogadol. You don't give it to a kohen to eat.
You throw it in the fire. In other words, it's. There aren't the alternative ways you have, like, for example, with the beer chometz.
There are. This is just the best way to get rid of it. But if you can't burn it for some reason, so you wrap it respectfully and you put it in the garbage.
Okay.
When you destroy chometz for Pesach, you don't have to wrap it respectfully. Get rid of it however you can. Mm-hmm. But, that's why the challah, since it has some holiness, so then you wrap it respectfully. V'shamati sheish mekomo shenagul hafresh challah gedola keshir shenasnu chachamim ba. So the Gemara says in Maseches Bechoros that when it comes to the challah that is separated outside the land of Israel, we have a leniency. So a challah that is separated in Eretz Israel can only be eaten by a kohen who's tahor, completely ritually pure. Whereas in Chutz La'aretz, it could be eaten by a Kohen, since it's only the Rabbanan, so they got to make whatever rules they wanted. So it can be eaten by a Kohen who is Tohor from impurities resulting from bodily emissions. Even though he's Tmei Meis, we don't have the Paraduma, so we can't get rid of the Tumah that comes from a dead body, but you can. Again, you won't be really tahor, but you can go to the mikvah and remove the tumah from things that come out from your body. So, for example, you could give the challah to a minor kohen under the age of 9. So a seminal mission, if you could call it that, from a boy under the age of 9 has no halachic status. So it's impossible for him to be a bal keri, to have an emission, to have a tumah from tumah yotzel al migufo. You could give it to a girl kohen who still lives in her father's house. So she'd be eating challah if in Eretz Yisrael, if everyone were tahor. So she'd give it to a female kohen again who is under the age who never menstruated, and then she would not have this problem as well. And technically, you could even give it to a adult kohen who has just recently gone to the mikvah and has not experienced any emission since then. So all these types of people could technically eat the challah of Chutz La'aretz only, and not from Eretz Yisrael. B'yathal pishu tot, me meis nagu l'chila b'osim mekomos. V'od nire sheish l'akel ba'od b'chalas Chutz La'aretz, shadim yochol avat l'chatchila b'rov. You can mix it in a majority of kosher food and then eat it. So we don't really do this. And we also don't really give it to the Kohanim most of the time. There were poskim who did. The Vilna Gaon was insistent to give the challah to a Kohen, and the Kohen went to the mikvah and ate it. But most people assume that there's challah lying around, the people aren't going to be tovel properly, maybe somebody might be a zav, and then you need to have count 7 clean days. It's a whole asik. So that's why nowadays the common practice is you just burn the challah and you don't give it to a Kohen. Okay. So he thinks you could even be mabat labrov. Now everybody agrees. Vein called the holy sur and shabbatora came the fiyad yasi zulasi beitzim shenashrim and adekal biyantif. So if you have a wood that fell off a tree on yantif, so that's mukta. That's not allowed because it wasn't prepared before yantif. It only arrived on yantif. Latocha tanor shemivat lenosam gamkin lechatchila. So that's what the Gemara says. You're allowed to mix it with permissible wood and burn it as long as there's a majority of permissible wood. Kedarina biyantif. Maseches Beitza says. Since it gets burned and it's not going to hang around, so then you're allowed to do the shtick of just adding a majority of permissible things. Now Rambam Zal Kosev Sefer Zroim Hilchos Truma Mikurim Perek Hamish. He was not as they shein misator b'nei tumas ames mafrishin chala achas b'chol Eretz Yisrael achas mimemches. So nowadays that everything is tamei, then you are mafrish challah 1 and 48. You don't have to be machmer with 1 and 24 as a householder normally would. So nowadays we don't separate the shear at all. Even Eretz Yisrael, you separate only the tiniest amount because you don't need to burn more than necessary. Chazal instituted that if you in the areas surrounding Eretz Yisrael, so they used to not only they used to have two challahs, one challah that you burned and one challah that you gave to a kohen. You don't have a minimal requirement.
Chalas kutzlaritz al vishit tumei ha'el v'ikar chiva midvrem en azur v'chil al kohen shetumah yotza v'gufo, as we explained. It's only if you have an emission, a tumor resulting from an emission, v'chein ba'al kroin, v'zov v'zov v'nuz gildos v'mitzorayin, aval sharet tumei ha'em b'maga b'tumos, afil tumei meis mutarim l'achla. But if you're tumei do a dead body only, and you've gone to the mikvah for your other tumah, then you can eat it. V'kach imayo sham kohen katan, v'chutz laritz b'im b'suri b'im b'sharatzos, aratz la'afrish chal achas, if you want to just la'afrish one chal and give it to a kohen who's tohor. We explained all this before, just going to Rambam. You don't have to separate a second challah. Again, if an adult Cohen went to the mikvah, he can delete it. You don't have to separate a second chutzar. So again, the regular minhag is, and it's only separate a tiny amount. And chutzar is separated kezayis, and certainly b'dieved, that will exempt the dough from challah.